Today's episode of the Sidious Mag Podcast on the Sidious Mag Podcast Network is brought to you by Goodert Sunglasses. It's the summertime. If you're out for a run or on the beach, you got to take care of those eyes and put some shades on. I've been rocking Goodert Sunglasses all summer. I've got all my friends wearing them because they're light, they don't slip, they don't bounce, they don't fog up, and the best part about them is that they are super affordable and start at just $25 a pair. So why break the bank for a pair of $250 sunglasses that you might lose or break? You can get like five pairs for half the price and then mix and match them to your outfits. My favorite part about Goodert Sunglasses is the name that they assign to all the different shades, and if you go to Goodert.com/Sidious, you can check out some of my favorites. I recently updated that list to include some new ones that I've been rocking. There's two pairs of their Superfly style. One of them is called Dirk's Inflation Station, and the other one is called Shaves Legs, Grows Beard. They have the origin stories behind the names on the site, so go and check them out. Goodert is generously offering our listeners nothing. Absolutely nothing at all, because there's no discount needed when they're already the most affordable performance shades out there. Go to Goodert.com/Sidious. That's Goodert.com/Sidious. Check out my favorites, snag a pair, tag me in your photos. Look good, run Goodert, legs are feeling good, eyes are looking gooder. My guest for today's episode is Trayvon Bromell. He is the 2015 World Championship bronze medalist in the 100. He is the 2016 World Indoor Champion in the 60. He was a finalist in the 100 meters at the 2016 Olympics in Rio. His personal best is 9.84. But ever since all of that took place, it's been a bit of a roller coaster for him. He's battled Achilles injuries and setbacks over the past 3 years. And I told him straight up that I thought he was done. Then last month, he pops a 9.90 at a small meet in Florida. And then he ran a 9.87 that was wind-aided. So it looks like this comeback is real. We address everything that's taken place since he came up as a high schooler, losing out on some of the years in his 20s due to the injuries, and why this has been a long road, not only to success, but out of poverty. So I really enjoyed this conversation. I definitely think Trayvon could be a regular on the show, because I've changed my mind on him being done, and it'll be really interesting to follow his story going into 2021. So hear it for yourself. Without further ado, here is Trayvon Bromell. All right, now we welcome back Trayvon Bromell. Now I'm saying welcome back because it's truly what it is. It's been one heck of a comeback so far. I think when I tweeted about it a couple weeks ago, I said, it's been 1,482 days since you broke 10 seconds for the 100 meters. So it's felt like a while. Is it safe to say Trayvon Bromell is back?
It depends on the perspective you look at it. Like, I mean, obviously, everybody know I went down with a serious injury, and things look kind of blurry. I guess in the terms of being back to the track, yeah, you could say, you know, I'm back, I'm doing better, I'm healthier. Things are going well, you know, as far as saying back to my full potential. Like, we still working, man. It's a lot of things that we still trying to deal with to help me become that top runner, you know. And it's just a journey, you know. I'm definitely excited being in the situation that I'm in now, with the group that I'm in now. It's a process, and it's one that I think is going to be worth the wait.
So where's the happiness level at, because you're sort of back to a routine where you're training every day and you're getting some races in? So where's that at for you?
Oh, I'm definitely happy, man, because it was kind of blurry with COVID coming into play and not knowing what was going to be. So for, you know, a lot of the pro groups to come out and, you know, have these meets, these USA sanctioned meets, and still going on the protocol for the restrictions with COVID and just keeping everybody safe. And you know, it was great, you know, that it came into play, because you want to make sure that your body still is ready for race shape during these times of the year, you know, especially going into next year, preferably like all this blows over and, you know, we can have the Olympics. You want to make sure that your body is ready and acclimated to be able to perform at this time of the year.
When you take account of, like, all right, there's some people who obviously win due to the extra time of having the trials and the Olympics postponed for a year, there's people who maybe, like, this could have been like their last shot. You're definitely, I feel like, in the winner's category, because you bought yourself definitely some more time after the postponement. So is that how you thought of it too when they announced it?
Yeah. A lot of people ask me like how I felt about it. I definitely think it gave me some more time to work on the foot and everything, get stronger and work on the things that I lost, you know, strength in the legs and just mechanics and stuff like that. So I definitely think it gave us time. My coach Rainer, he always says like, you know, this is definitely a benefit for you because new training groups are obviously getting adjusted and everything and being in a position to get some work in, some good work in, get some running in and see how the body adjusts to everything. So I definitely think it was a benefit for me. But of course, I hate that the Olympics had to get postponed. Like, who, you know, we all look forward to it. It's every 4 years. So, you know, when something like this happens, we like, man, you know, it's not like you get an opportunity for a Super Bowl or NBA Finals every year like every other sport. Like, we wait for this big dance every 4 years. So when it comes into play, like, to know that we got to wait, you know, and still not even know what's going to happen, it's kind of, you know, it frustrates you as an athlete because you never know, you know. So
when I was going through your Instagram, this is something I found pretty interesting because it seems like you're in this new chapter sort of your career with a new training group, a new mindset sort of. And I went through it and the photos go back to 2016, but it's sort of late 2016. There's no photos of you at the Olympics. There's no even mention of you being an Olympian in your bio. So what is it, I guess, about this, that experience in 2016 that you've sort of put behind and are now moving forward, you know, as in this new chapter?
Well, I know one thing, like, me and Coach Rainer and our PT, Andy, we talked about is that with this transition, there's no reason for comparison of, like, the athlete that I was to who I am now. Because if I reminisce and think about the things that happened before the injury, then I'm going to be stuck in the mindset of trying to compare and do that and try to stay stuck in those ways where, obviously, with the injury, I had to relearn my body. I had to relearn to understand how to run my mechanics and everything. So dwelling on the past wasn't going to do anything but hinder me. So I really honestly don't try to think too much of it. Like, definitely blessed with the opportunities. Obviously, I was a world indoor champion. And, of course, in 2015, I was a bronze medalist. So it's things to definitely be grateful for. But I can't not look past the injury of 2016 at the Olympics. So I try not to think too much and dwell on it because I'm trying to focus on the present and what's going on now.
So, I mean, I'm going to ask you to go back a little bit, unfortunately, for the sake of the podcast. But I guess for 2016, up until that point, like you said, you were 20 years old, made an Olympic team, medaled at Worlds, was a world indoor champion, signed a huge contract. When at 20 years old, what was the hardest part of your career up until that point?
Being young and being in all that, man, I think the hardest part was just understanding the maturity of the and the responsibility of everything. Obviously, I turned pro when 19 years old. So, obviously, big contract. Like I said, with me, from everybody knows, like, my humble beginnings, like, coming from having nothing to be able to afford anything I want, you know. So it's like, it was hard at first, you know, but I'm definitely blessed that I had people in my circle to be like, hey, chill out, like, don't do too much, understand what you need to do. You know, now you're a young kid, but you have an adult responsibility. Like, understand this, like, set yourself up to where you can be good for the rest of your life. So I think that was the hardest thing, is being overwhelmed and overjoyed with the things and the luxuries that I could have, but understand the responsibilities that I can't get too wild. So that was the biggest thing. Obviously, you know, you're young, like I said, so you're thinking like, man, I can buy everything, like, you know. So that was the biggest thing. I think the maturity part of it is understanding like, hey, you're a kid in an adult world, and now you have to understand how to move and maneuver through everything.
What was the first big luxury buy, I think, that you let yourself, you treated yourself to?
Man, I tell people all the time, and it's the craziest thing, and I wish I could change. Man, I just went and was just buying cars, man. Like, it was the stuff you see people do on TV, that's the, like, movies, that's what I was doing. Like, I was just buying cars. Like I had a new car every 3 months. Like, it was crazy. I was just like, yo. And it's like, now, don't get me wrong, like, I still love cars, and, you know, like, I definitely think that's just my fetish. Like, I love vehicles. Like, I've always been a car person. Like, my grandfather was a street racer. So, I grew up around cars. Like, my first car, Toyota Celica GT 2002 stick shift. So I actually learned how to drive a stick shift in my backyard, and my mom didn't like that. So
I messed up that grass, but I learned how to drive a stick at a young age.
And so I guess, when did things start to really take a turn for you in 16?
I think it really, I don't even think it tipped a turn for me in 2016. Like, yes, I went down and had complications. I think the biggest turn for me was probably in 2018. Because after that, obviously after 2017, I was like, all right, I was able to go to USA's run 10-2. And I was like, okay, this is something I could build off of. But then it was like 2018, I had nothing. It was just like, I couldn't run. I couldn't do anything. Like, the injury wasn't getting better. I wasn't improving or anything. It was just like at a halt. So that was kind of like the big turn for me of not knowing where I was going to land in all this, like understanding how my future would go after that day when I kind of just hit that blank spot of just like, okay, what's next for me?
But in sort of like the actual injury itself, it was Birmingham Diamond League. I think you started to feel something, right, toward your Achilles. You ran at the trials, tied your PR. And so to everyone watching, it's like, oh, all right, like things are on the come up right before you go to Rio. But in reality, you get back to your hotel or like even right after that race, how bad was the pain?
So are we talking about the pain at Rio or USA's?
Let's go USA's before Rio.
Okay, USA's. I came back from overseas, you know, got ultrasound, seen what it was, and I was like, okay, like, what can we do? It was like, you know, take like Advil or something, like just to knock the pain down. So I'm like, okay, cool. And you know, I didn't train. And we got like almost like a week and a half. That was the crazy thing. It was like a week and a half before USA's, what me and Coach Ford at Baylor was, we just put in some work. You know, we was like, okay, you obviously in a couple weeks, you ain't about to lose no speed and you're not about to lose no like strength and everything like that. So when I got back, the only thing that I did, I worked with my weight coach, Coach Chris Roof. Like, was in the weight room doing stuff, but I wasn't doing any like contact stuff with my foot. So we were just doing like upper body things. And like I said, the week and a half prior to USA's before us leaving. So say for instance, like we started working out, I want to say like Monday of like a week before, and pretty much because I always like to give myself a week before USA, so I fly out on Monday and race like on like Friday or Thursday, whenever it is. So I like to give myself a couple of days before I race, I'll be already up there. So we didn't start training till like the Monday prior. So like we just got on the track, probably did like some grass stuff, did some resistant things. So I used to do like my resistant band work, just for, you know, when I'm pushing out. We did one block session. We did one block session before USA's, and that was it. And then we got to USA's and was like, everybody was asking, like, you know, are you good? You good? I'm like, man, we just about to see what's about to happen. So obviously, first round, I went 9.95, and I was like, okay, I'm good. Like, me and my coach was happy. We was like, okay, obviously, I can run on it. So we was like, all right, let's just, you know, see what we do next round. And I went and ran well next round, obviously in the finals. I got back to the hotel, I was fine. Like, I didn't have no problems. I didn't have no, you know, no pain or anything. The pain didn't come until, I want to say, it was at training camp, which was, you know, definitely hard to deal with because, like, I think it was just the overuse of my, like, of my body. We was up early doing, like, relay handoffs, and I feel like that really played a big, intricate part of like me getting injured again, just like flaring up the inflammation because we was out doing relay handoffs like all day, like all morning. So I think that was a big thing that had hurt me a lot going into Rio. It's just I wish I would have just stayed off of it, you know, and just waited until the 100 and raced the 100 and not have to worry about it. Because obviously after running 9.8, I was one of the guys to pick, you know, to go and win. So it kind of hurt me a lot knowing like I got to a training camp in Houston and had an injury there, like the foot flared up and I couldn't even like walk or run on it. So I was just chilling again into Rio, not knowing what was gonna happen and just struggled throughout the rounds and just did what I was able to do, you know, to make kind of my dream, you know, come true.
Yeah, so kind of we can see the results now in retrospect. And in the 100 final, you end up making it all the way there, but you finished last. In those starting blocks right before that race, did you think you had any shot of meddling or like what was going through your head at that point knowing that this is you're just running on last legs here?
Yeah, I just was like at first I was like after the semis, I was gonna like just like, man, I don't even wanna run. Like just take me out of the final. But then I was like, man, this is a like a dream come true. Like, this is an opportunity I've always prayed for and everything. And I'm like, who would I be to turn this down? Because if it was anyone else, they would have went out there. You know, they would have just took what they had given to them, you know. So I had to understand, like, in retrospect, like, I'm like, man, look, I'm like, Trey, this is what you always dreamt of. This is what you always prayed to God for. If you turn this down, you may not ever get this opportunity ever again. So I was just like, bump it. Like, shoot, I'm going to just go out there and run. Like, it is what it is at this point. Like, first or last, like, I was in an Olympic 100-meter final. So can't take that away, you know. So that's kind of just how I thought about it. I didn't think, like, oh, I'm going to go out there and still try to win. I'm a realist. Like, I had to understand, like, I was in a predicament where it was hindering me from even trying to go and attempt first place, you know. So that was kind of what was running through my mind, just to go out there, run, make my dream come true.
You run in the relays, and the last image that I guess people have from the Olympics of you is just being carted off in a wheelchair. I guess, like, we can't really see what happens next. The cameras don't follow you that far. But what happened after that? You get taken off the track on a wheelchair. What happened next?
So we go in the back room, like the medical room, and it was checking out everything and trying to figure out what happened. And I was telling them, like, once I passed the line, it was like my foot kind of got stuck to the track. I tumbled and I hit my heel right on the track. So that bone spur that was on my heel, it was just like jammed right into the Achilles. So obviously with something like that, I couldn't even walk on it. Like, it was too much pain there. Because a lot of people thought, like, the reason of me going down was the Achilles, and it wasn't. I actually, like, you know how you'll just be walking on the track with your spikes and you just clip and it grabs, so you stumble a bit. That was kind of what happened when I was trying to lean past the line. Like, my foot kind of got stuck in the rubber and I took the tumble. And basically, once my back was on the ground and my foot had to come down, it was like the heel just boom, like that, onto the ground. So that bone spur, which was like basically like a pointy rock, like, I can use this USB input. This was like the bone spur in Achilles. When I hit the ground, that bone spur went right into the Achilles tendon. So it was a lot of pain in that. So I couldn't walk, you know, in that situation. So they wrapped it up, iced it up and everything. And I was on crutches. I was on crutches the rest of the meet. So even like the next couple of days, I couldn't even walk on it. It was just crutches, seeing the PTs and everything.
So between 2016 and 2017, what did you have to do to the bone spur?
So right after Rio, I flew back, instantly seen a doctor. I wish I would have took my time with that, because I just rushed into any doctor, like, and I didn't let them know how important this was for my career. And I got the surgery. He told me not to do anything. So that led to scarring of the Achilles actually being scarred down to the heel bone, which is something that's very serious as well, which the doctor who ended up doing my second surgery, Dr. Blum, down in Orlando, he ended up seeing it and was like, hey, you know, how you felt after, you know, 2017 at USA's? I was like, I'm fine. Like, I ran 10-2. I'm not tripping. Like, after the whole first surgery, I was like, I think we in good shape. He was like, nah. He's like, your Achilles is scarred to your bone. I'm like, what? Like, what do you mean it's scarred down to my bone? He was like, literally, like, your tendon supposed to have a gap from your bone. Like, obviously, it comes off the heel, off the insertion, but it's still a gap there that it's supposed to be. And he was like, nah, your tendon is, like, on the bone like that, where it's supposed to be kind of, like, a little space. So I'm like, what does that mean? Like, what are you telling me? He was like, I don't know how you didn't even snap your tendon. Like, he was like, your tendon should have ruptured. So I was thinking, God, like, thank you, God, that didn't happen, because I'd have been tripped out if that would have happened, you know. And that probably would have been a career, you know, threatening injury. So he went in, he pretty much pulled the tendon off the bone, cleaned it up, took all that off. So then I'm back in a boot for, you know, I think a couple, like a month or so. But unlike the first doctor, Dr. Blum told me soon, like 2 days after the surgery, like, take your foot out and do like ankle pumps. And then gradually, like in 2 weeks, like, you start doing band, like ankle pumps, like with the band and everything. So just getting stuff moving and working on stability and everything, and trying to get that area around that Achilles stronger as well. So yeah, it was a process, and it was hard, man. I tell anybody that your foot is probably one of the hardest things. Like, I don't wish that it was something else, because obviously I don't want to be injured at all. We know my history of injuries. Like, I've had it since I was a child, so I don't want no injuries. But I was just thinking, like, man, why couldn't it be
this or that. Like, why had to be my foot? Something that gets little to no blood flow usually. You know what I'm saying? Like, everything down there really doesn't get blood flow like that. So when it comes to healing, it is a like a slow process, you know, especially the Achilles tendon. So it ain't like it's a hamstring where we can go get like stem cells and vitamins and all this and boom, you could be back racing, you know, get some strength work. That area has limited like blood supply. So it's like you got to find ways to get some blood down there and get the healing process going. Then the strength of something that's like a rubber band is like, that's tough. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been a tough process.
Yeah, hearing you talk about even like 17 and running like 10-2, being somewhat content, like all things considered, knowing like what was going on, what was, I guess, like the most frustrating part, or was there ever like really any doubt that crept in with you, knowing like your PR is so much faster than that, but when your body is only going so fast and it's far from your best? I mean, what goes through your head in that sort of situation?
I think the most frustrating part, and I think it'd be for anybody, like people know me. I'm a competitor. Like, I'm cool, I'm chill, but when I get on a track, it's something about me. Like, I don't care what your name is, I don't care what your PR is. Like, it's either I'm about to get out this box and you gonna catch me, or I'm going. Like, I'm that's just always been me. Like, cause you gotta think, I grew up being the smallest guy. Like, I've never been like that big, just name person growing up. So any opportunity I get to compete, I'm going to represent for the little people. You know what I'm saying? Because I was one of that. Like, real talk, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've always had the odds against me because of my deficiencies. Like, I've always – the injuries, like, me not being the tallest guy, like, everybody always counted me out. So once I step on the track, it's like I have to give it my all. You know what I'm saying? So the frustrating part with not being able to run to my ability is that mentally I'm always there. And that's what always led to more injuries, because if I could fast forward to 2019 when I ran at Dennis Mitchell's track meet, like, my mindset was, okay, I feel fine, so I'm going to go and try to attempt the, you know, impossible in somebody, in people's mind. And with trying to do that, my body was like, no, I'm not ready for that. So it led to more injuries. So it was kind of frustrating because mentally I wanted to run fast, but physically I wasn't ready yet. So that's the hardest part with dealing with stuff like that, because it's like, man, I feel fine, so let me try to go. But trying to go leads to maybe groin or calf or, you know, some type of blowout that slows the process down. And I think that's the hardest – that was, like, the hardest part for me, because I felt fine. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't produce because mentally I tried to go past the barrier, you know, and I wasn't ready yet.
Even now, when people like look at results or even go on like your IAAF profile and see that you're 25, so you're still in your prime, but because your rise was so fast and you had run such fast times at a young age, looking at the period of time that these injuries kind of took from you, it was like, those are some quality years. How did you sort of approach that and think of like, you know, this was a good chunk of time that I had the opportunity to continue to build, but it's gone?
So I'm gonna put this in the perspective of everything, and it's something that a lot of people had to talk to me about. Like, let's think about this. I started track at a young age, yes, but I also played other sports. I played football, I did a little bit of basketball, so I wasn't just a one athlete person. Like, I was doing other stuff, still trying to find where I fit in. I got injured 2008 with my right knee, 2009 my left knee, and 2010 my hip. 2011 I was running female times. That didn't take my body through nothing. I was running 11 seconds. My senior high school, I just got to 10 ones, and then obviously the 9.9 and things like that. Got to college, freshman year ran 9, second year went 9.90, and then went into the pro circuit my first year and went 9.8. Now, let's fast forward past that. I didn't run it all because of the injuries. So, really, when is my prime? Because I don't have miles on my body of running as a professional. So, if we think about that in a perspective, my prime now gets pushed back to this age because now, like, I wasn't doing nothing for 3 years. Like, I'm able to build and build and build and kind of get back those times missed. People see the 9.90 and is in shock, but people forget. I know what it feels like to run 9.8. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I know what it takes. I just need to train it. The training that I missed out on because I was missed.
So now it's like, okay, when is his prime peak? Because he really wasn't doing nothing but sitting down at the house for 3 years. So right. it's like a car. Like I'm pretty sure you could go buy a fast car right now and not drive it for a long time, but it's still gonna be fast. You just gotta warm it up a little bit. You know what I'm saying? It don't have no miles on it. That's why it still costs a lot. You know what I'm saying? So you gotta put the thing in perspective, and that's one thing like my coach make fun about a lot of times. Like when we're working out, I'm like, coach, I need a break. He said, you had a break for 3 years. Like, you know what I'm saying? But like, if we're being honest, like, I still feel young. Like, even though I am, I just turned 25. But it's like, I still feel like I'm at that 21 years age because I don't have mileage on my body. Like, mm-hmm. I had 1 year on the pro circuit, barely. I ran, 3-4 meets as a pro. Like, I ran indoors. I ran one meet indoors, went overseas, hurt my groin, came back, ran USAs and Worlds. Got outdoors, ran the Great City Games outdoor race on the street race. Went to Rome, ran the 200, got hurt, came back, Olympics. I don't really have a lot of races under my belt, if we being honest. So, I mean, I'm just along for the ride, man. I'm just running and seeing where it takes me because I don't know. I don't even know what my prime is now. Because like you said, for most people who may not endure injuries and stuff, from 22 to 23, 24, or 25 is like that period of growth to boom at 25, 26, you're being a contender for a medal at a world championships or Olympics. So I don't know where I'm at on my spectrum of where's my prime. Like maybe now I'll build, and now my prime is like 28.
That'd be nice.
And may see 9.7, 9.6s or faster. Like, I still got to adapt. I haven't – even when people see me run the 9.8, I still wasn't, like, groomed into the athlete that I needed to be. I had things mechanically I needed to fix, like, just nutrition, everything. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was still, like – I was a free spirit when y'all see me run 9.8. I was just like, shoot, I'm just going. Like, I'm just having fun. I didn't like me and Coach Ford. We were working. We was definitely putting in the time, but I was still growing. Like I still needed growth, you know. So, you know, it's really humbling, and it's definitely like something to put in perspective for myself and definitely people around me. Like, man, just be alone this journey and just, you know, see what God has to show for all this. Because obviously, I don't know. Like I tell people, like, man, it surprises me and it humbles me all the time to be in this situation. Because we can sit here and be honest, like, I guarantee nobody on the planet seen 990 coming, especially no time this, you know, this fast coming back racing. So, you know, I'm just running and seeing where it takes me, man. I'm just sitting here and doing what my coach tells me to do.
As you've sat out, I mean, it's got to be hard for someone who's as much of a competitor as you to also watch the U.S. sprints continue to just get even better. I mean, in these pocket of like 3 years or so, you've got the rise of Noah Lyles and, you know, then especially Christian Coleman has won a couple world medals as well. What has that been like for you it's out of your control. You can't do what your competitors do. All you can do is just, you know, continue to hopefully get healthy and get back into it. But to just watch all this, what have you made of it?
Oh man, it's not something that I find too, you know, out of the blue. Obviously, I know Christian from Olympics, like when he made the relay pool in Washington through college. And then obviously I watched like Noah Lyle, Michael Norman throughout their high school career and, you know, seeing them develop as pro athletes as well. So it's not too much of a surprise to me. Like the names that's obviously the big names right now, I've seen them develop, and I've seen that they had the potential to be great one before they even came onto the scene. So it's not really a surprise. I mean, like I said, the only thing I look at is like, obviously, I wish I was out there, you know, because who's to say me running against Christian, me running against Noah, what my PR would be, you know, if I didn't get injured. Like, you know, like I said, in retrospect, like I was 19 and ran 9.8, you know, who's to say what I would have ran if I didn't get injured, you know, so. And, you know, that's the only thing I probably would always think about. Like, you know, my friends that always call me and ask me, how you feel about that race, man? Man, we wish you wasn't injured. Because if you was there, I'm like, man, I can't think about it like that because I'm injured. You know, it's like it's out of my hands. But, you know, it's just the thought of I wish I was, you know, in the races that, you know, we've seen in the past and the championships and stuff. Like, it's hard being at home watching when, you know, you love this, you know, you put all your all into it and you can't do anything about it.
Can you explain to someone like me and maybe people who aren't as familiar, because you do mention sort of like how that competition also drags you to sort of faster time. So hypothetically, Christian has been running super fast the last couple of years. And what, how does that technically work for someone like you being in the same race? How does that drag you along to a much faster time?
Man, it's a mindset. It's honestly a mindset, because I'm going to tell you this. I've been around a lot of, you know, competitions, obviously through NCAA and something I did on the circuit. A lot of people, when they meet fast people, they scare themselves out of a potentially good race or how the track world said an upset. So whenever I raced against like Gatlin or Tyson or Usain, like I always thought to myself, like, Trey, they're supposed to run fast and win. They're supposed to, because society in the track world says they're the big dogs, they're the vets, they're the top guys, so they're supposed to win. That should take less pressure off of you as an athlete. As an up-and-comer, if you can run with these guys, that's a benefit for you. Like, when I first raced Tyson, 2015, at USA's, like, everybody was like, Trey, how are you so calm? Tyson is supposed to win. He's supposed to win because he's Tyson Gay. That's how the world sees him. He's Tyson Gay. But for my job is, Trey, you have no pressure on you. You are the young NCAA cat who's just coming here to see where he sits in this, you know, this circle of life. So that's how I think, like, you know, in the future, whenever I race Christian, or whenever I race, well, obviously when I race Noah, my mindset is like, hey, they're the top dogs. Okay, like, there's no pressure on me. I'm gonna just go out there and do what my coach tells me to do. And whatever happens, happens. And you have to think, like, people let fear take them out of the conversation of how fast they can run. I've always looked at it like, if I know Tyson or Gatlin or Bolt is 9.7s, 9.6 runners, if I can be close by them, I got a PR. So why run from an opportunity to race against these fast guys? Like, it can help you. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, that's the thing I never understood people. Like, I've literally seen people just like, oh, this guy running, yeah, man, we about to lose. Like, why think like that? Like, I've never thought like that. When I race against people that I know have a better time than me on paper, I'm like, okay, this is going to be fun. Like, we're going to see what, like, if I'm close by, obviously I done ran fast too. So, because I know they're not going to run slow. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, but I've seen people just like, oh, they're racing. Yep, everybody's about to lose. Like, 2016 indoors, when Asafa went 6:44 throughout the rounds, everybody was like, well, he's going to win. I'm like, he going to win. Like, track and field is black and white. Like, you don't know what could happen. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, why count yourself out before it already happens? You know what I'm saying? So that's my thing.
It's so interesting, because now you sort of like find yourself in two very interesting pockets where, like, just a few years ago, you were, you know, that NCAA kid, that rookie who was not really supposed to win, but could make it like very, very far and maybe, you know, pull off the upset. Now you find yourself as like the comeback guy, and eventually will likely, hopefully, end up back on top. So how has that changed sort of your mindset toward races now, especially something like low key out in Claremont where you did end up running 9:90?
Man, I always looked at my life since my injuries and my humble beginnings. I always looked at my life as a story to tell to influence others. So me being back in the shoes of the limelight of being a comeback kid or the underdog that's on his way back up, it's just another part of the story that I can use to influence the youth. And I think that's the thing that gets me through all this, because, like you said, growing up, like, when I came to NCAAs and I did not have a good indoor year, it was like, yeah, kid ran 9:9 in high school. We knew it was a fluke. And then I went to produce good times outdoors. And now I inspire a lot of kids to not listen to the naysayers, you know. So now it's kind of like in that same boat. Like, as much as people try to get me so hyped, like, yeah, bro, you're going to beat this person, you're going to beat that person, I'm like, it's not about that. And I think that's the thing I love. I love the story, because it's not always about the rivalry or the competition. And I think that's the thing that gets me through times like this. Like, okay, running 9:90, that was cool. Like, I'm just running. Like I said, I'm just doing what I know God giving me the talent to do, and that's to inspire people. So I think I put that in the back of my head and try to sit and manifest in that, because once I start making it about self, that's when self-destruction comes. And I've been through too much trauma, you know, and I don't want to be back in that boat no more.
You know, so it's funny, because a couple months ago, I think you might have had like one race It might have even been back in January. You produced a result, and a friend of mine texted me, and he was like, "Oh, Trayvon Bermel, like, really good result." And I was sort of like, "I'll come clean." And I said I was a doubter, and I was like, yes. I can't believe, like, I'm not sold. Like, I think like he got injured, and I think he's kind of done at this point. So why didn't you quit?
Man, like I said, it's the people around me, man. You got to have a solid group of people around you. The people around me, man, they never let me give up. They never let me be in the dark of everything. Like I said, 2018, I was lost, man. I didn't know what was going to be it for me. And I just wanted to just be done. But like I said, the people around me, they was like, man, you got a lot left in you. You just got to keep fighting. And obviously, like I said, like the lateness of my coach, Coach G, who died, she was a fighter. And I kind of just always remember her a lot in the situation because she fought her situation. So I'm like, man, I can't give up, you know? So, yeah, man, like dealing with that is just, I just had to keep pushing. It was definitely hard. But once, you know, obviously the love from Baylor and that I got, they kept me moving, and then coming down to Raina, the Coach Raina group, and being with my teammates now, man, it's like we all for each other. So it's like we all want to see each other thrive and do great things. So that kind of uplift you more to not give up, because they can even tell you, like, man, I still had some dark days even when I got to the group. Like I wear my emotions on my sleeve. Like, I'm not gonna lie to you. Like, if I get mad, like, you gonna see it. Like, I try not to bring negativity, but it's like I've been hurt so much, you know what I'm saying, in my life with things. So it's like I wanna have something that feel good. So obviously, but they keep me up, man, and I love the group for that, and I love the people around me for that. And I think that's the big thing with being an athlete too. You gotta have a foundation of people that's there to help you when times get hard.
Now, my same friend who texted me is Daniel Wynn. He's a distance runner from the University of Oregon who graduated a few years ago. He said he was a little upset that you've abandoned the short shorts for half tights now, I guess, like in your race. Is that true? What went into that move?
Nah, so you want to know what's funny? I was just telling my coach. I was telling him that next year I'm going to bring them back. It's just trying to get back into the swing of things, man. Like, right now, I'm working with whatever New Balance give me, because, like I said, like I never get mad when people say, oh, we didn't know if you were going to be back or not. Come on, I was out for 3 years. You can't just – it's hard for people on the outside looking in to just be like, yeah, he's going to be a 9-8 guy again. So I don't show no hatred or anything to people that didn't believe, because at first I didn't believe. It still shocked me that I went out and ran 10-0 and then 2 weeks later 9-9. So, like, trust me. You telling me that, you know, oh, I didn't believe, like, trust me, I almost didn't believe. Like, I was still shocked. You can ask my coach, man. I was broke down when I ran 10-0. Like, I was literally on the gate in disbelief that I ran 10-0. So it's like, but yeah, I'm gonna bring back the short shorts, man. Like, it's just, like I said, talking with New Balance, I got a lot of stuff like in the works for the upcoming year. A lot of memorial stuff for my coach. Definitely, like, I definitely want to, you know, show love to her with whatever, you know, we lost her and it was such a big thing, but definitely going to bring some merch into play and bring back the short shorts, you know.
I mean, that's one thing I definitely remember from sort of the news sort of right after you signed your pro contract, and I think maybe the year or so to follow while you're a pro and you were young and you realize you have all this money. It was one thing was definitely community for you. And it was wanting to set up either it was a foundation or some sort of programs within schools for you to get involved. And I even remember reading about this back in January when you ran at the New Balance indoor meet. And it said in the Let's Run article that it was part of you that just didn't want to get back to the south side of St. Petersburg. I don't know what that area is like. And some of the people listening might not be familiar with it. So can you paint the picture for us? Like, what is it like in that area, and sort of what are you hoping to accomplish with your running career for that community?
Man, so it's funny. I was just talking to the Florida State team, just giving them some words of encouragement and letting them know, like, man, on the south side and in a lot of areas, you know, and I ain't just speaking from my south side of my city, because obviously we got places like L.A. and Chicago and New York that's real big in gang violence. So, and obviously people see the memes about Florida and how crazy we is. Some of that stuff be a little boosted, but man, like the South Side part of it is pretty much real, man. It's hectic, you know. Like I said, I grew up not having a lot, you know what I'm saying? Like, me and my mama, we was able to have what we was able to have. I slept at people's houses majority of my life, you know, even the home that my mama did, you know, work hard for and own. Like, man, I was sleeping on holes on the floor. Like, man, I was borrowing shoes and clothes. Like I came from nothing. I'm probably one of few people in the pro world that really come from like that real deal humble beginning. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's nothing to take away from nobody else, but it was hard, man. Like it was different. Like I grew up like robbers running through the backyards, like hearing police sirens every night going to sleep, like gunshots, ducking from bullets. Like that's real life. Like, so it's hard, you know, when you make it and situations happen, because the scariest thing in your life to think about is going back to that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was the first thing that ran through my mind. I was like, man, if I'm done, like, even with me having a degree and everything, I was like, dog, I don't want to be back in the trenches. Like, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to move and maneuver. You know, like, so that's the hardest thing. But it's like, with where I'm at now and what I do and why I love doing this is because I can motivate people. Like, I tell people all the time, like, my little brother, like, he in jail right now. And me and him talk all the time, man. And we talk about just how we can be better people, you know. And to see somebody that's incarcerated from a very serious, you know, crime and see him talk about getting his, he got his GED, he be reading the Bible and stuff like, so I can motivate more than just him. I can motivate communities and do things like that. So it's like people understand, like, and I think a lot of people can relate to me. So it's like, I think, like you said, community is big for me because we need more people and icons for this type of thing. Like, I tell you right now, it ain't no superheroes where I'm from. Like, it's not. Like, I'm gonna just be honest with you. Like, we talking about people that's killers by the age of 13. Like, really killing people. Like, that's straight up. Like, it ain't no joke. So that's why I think I take it so serious. And I ain't gonna lie, I'm gonna just say it. Like, it's frustrating sometimes because you see a lot of people wanna mimic the image of being from the South Side. They think it's cool, you know. They let NBA YoungBoy influence them, and he's really like that. And a lot of people that wants that image, they're not like that. So it's frustrating for me sometimes because I'm like, man, we trying to do a justice of helping people get out of those situations. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, it's crazy to see people want to live that lifestyle and that's not them. So, man, it's wild. But yeah, man, the South Side, it's serious. And I think we need a lot of more people doing more things. Like, I'm going to be honest with you, I feel like I can do more things. Like, I can't wait to COVID over so I can step in some of these schools and like, juvenile delinquent centers and like, talk to these people. You know what I'm saying? Because they need somebody to talk to. You know, like, I tell people all the time, man, I hated growing up and hearing no my whole life. Oh, I want to be that? No. Okay, I want to work? No. You're going to be a worker. You're going to work for somebody. Your whole life, you hear that. Like, you ain't going to be nothing. Oh, you want to be Olympian? That's funny. Like, that's what we grew up in. Like, so we are a product of our environment. And if we don't have people coming to our environment to make the product better, then we fail, you know? So, yeah, man, it's all about the community, man, at the end of the day.
What was it for you? What did you want to be, and what did someone say no?
Man, I told people I wanted to be an Olympian. Man, I can't tell you how many people I said I wanted to be an Olympic gold medalist, I wanted to be a medalist. And these people would laugh at me. Like, when I was a youngin', like, they were like, nah, man. That ain't happening, man. You too small. You too. I'm like, and it started to be a reality. Like, it's funny. Like, even if y'all got a chance to talk to Coach Ford, like, I remember telling Coach Ford when I was getting ready to figure out what I was going to do with my life and everything. Like, Coach Ford recruited me, you know, to go to Baylor. And I was telling him, I was like, and we had complications with getting into school because I didn't care about school. Obviously, my grades wasn't good. I'm like, man, we're in the South Side, man. My school that I go to was I think at that time was an F school. We threw a party when we became a D school. Like, come on now, like, not too many people make it or not, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, I remember telling Coach Ford, I was like, man, if I don't go to college, like, I already know where I'm gonna be at. You know, simple as that. Like, I already know. So it's like, if we want to save kids that come up in this, and I don't even want to make it a race thing, kids in general, because all races come up in some of these situations. So I'm like, man, if we want to get kids out of here, man, we got to start fighting for them. And that's one thing Coach Ford did for me was fight for me, because my whole life I heard that I wasn't going to be nothing. The only people that believed in me was my coaches, my family, and my mama. Besides that, they, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not taking away nothing from them, but let's be real. Like, your parents and everybody going to always tell you that you're going to be somebody great. But when you hear everybody on the outside telling you you're not, it started to become like, man, maybe I'm not. You know what I'm saying? So I think that was the biggest thing for me, man. Like, just trying to figure out, was the reality of the things that I dreamt about was going to come and manifest, or was what everybody spoke was going to come true?
How'd you incorporate the arts into it? Because, you know, you, in the last couple of years, I guess you've also, you know, started doing a bunch of photography, some music. Where did the seeds of that begin?
Man, growing up, I did music. Definitely was always around it. So music was always a thing for me. I definitely think it's a way for me to, it's like therapy to me, so I can kind of speak what's on my mind. Like people, like I don't really put out my music like that no more, but a lot of it is like things I've been through, things I done dealt with. So if people always want to find out like what Trayvon had been through, what, you know, how you been feeling, like you can listen to my music, like FTBTB from the Bird, Trayvon Brumell is my handle on all platforms. So they can kind of see like, okay, what's running through his mind. With photography, obviously being in sports, like you always in front of the camera, and I just always like see like, obviously like MTV and BET and stuff like that. And I'm like, man, maybe I can make somebody look good by taking a picture. Or when I was like in college and stuff, I'd be like, man, why they took the angle like that? Like, what? Why they didn't catch me like when I was doing this? And I'd be like, man, and then like I picked up the camera and like I started taking pictures of some of my other friends as athletes, and they like, oh, this clean. I said, yeah, if I was a photographer at the meets, I'd be having y'all, like me and my boy Will London. Like, I remember we set up a photo shoot during a meet. Like, he was like, Trey, when I come around the last bend indoors for the 4x4, I'm gonna do this and get the picture. I said, bet, boom. Then that thing was in the newspaper. I was like, man, look, yeah, like I don't know. I just like the arts, and I like making people look good, you know what I'm saying? So that, like, it's funny, like before we got on the call, like a lot of people don't know. Like, I'm in barber school right now too. So, you know, I'm picking up some clippers and everything, you know, learning the arts of that and the trade of that. So yeah, man, I like to use my time wisely.
Barbers are crucial during the pandemic, I think, like having that skill.
yeah.
All right, final questions I ask every guest. Here we go. First one, what's the funniest drug testing story you've got?
The funniest drug testing story? Man, what's the funniest drug testing story? Oh, my gosh. Dang, I don't even think, do I got any funny ones? I think my funniest one was that my DOC, he had to follow me to class. So obviously, you know, they can't leave you until you use the bathroom. So I'm funny with my people. Like, so I like to make everybody feel comfortable. So they come and I'm like, I walk in like the training room and they in, and I'm like, oh, here we go again. And I tell them, oh, I ain't got a pee, so y'all gotta come with me to class. So they walking with me through Baylor. So I'm in class like professor, this is my drug tester. They can't leave my side, and they're like, "What is happening?"
That's amazing. I haven't heard of an NCAA like, because I guess you were in the pool at that point, right? While you were still in school, so yeah.
That's the thing. I turned pro in 2015, mm-hmm. my sophomore year, but I was still going to school even as a professional. So I wasn't an athlete for Baylor no more. But since I was still in class, like they had to come.
Right.
They was like in the back of the room, like, and I'm sitting down. They looking like, why these two individuals in the back of the room, like, just standing there, like, cause they, man, they are poised. They in the back, like, I'm like, yeah,
that's
like,
amazing. Yeah,
that's what happens, man.
All right, so Let's Run wrote a good article about you back in the spring, and I don't think there's too many sprints covered on like their message boards. But what's the meanest thing you've read about yourself, either on Let'sRun.com or online?
The meanest thing that I ever, man, honestly, I think the meanest. I wouldn't even say the meanest thing that I read, because a lot of it is kind of the same. But I think it's more so like the hatred people have for me for no reason. Like, that's the crazy thing. Like, you ever read something, they be like, oh, I'm glad this happened. I don't like them. And you like, why you don't like me? Like, I ain't doing nothing to you. You know what I'm saying?
They took,
like,
the time to write the comment, too. It just.
Exactly. So I'll be reading. So, like, I go down and be like, oh, you know, everybody's like, oh, Trayvon, nah, 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 nah. And then you'll see that one person's like, oh, I hate him. I'm like, hate me? I'm like, you don't even know me. Like, how can you hate me? You know what I'm saying? And like I said, like, I don't, you know, people know me even on the circuit. Like, I see people, I greet people, I say, what's up? I do, you know, I keep quiet, I do my own thing, I stay in my own lane. Everybody who know me know that. Like, I don't get, like, even at track meets, you ain't never seen me showboat. Like, I don't be all in the camera doing all this. Like, I'm just like, hey, I'm here. I'm doing what I love doing. I'm gone. I definitely sign autographs. I give spikes away, dude. You know, do all the, you know, the luxuries of it all, you know, to make everybody else feel good. Mm-hmm. So to see you say you hate me, I'm like, but then I had to realize it's 7 billion people on the planet. Everybody right. ain't gonna like you. At the end of the day, it is what it is. Like, I can't be mad at that. Like, everybody is not going to like you, no matter how much good you do. Look, like I said, I'm a very religious person. Shoot, people hated Jesus too. Can't do nothing about it. If we being real, you can't do nothing about it. I'm not comparing myself to Jesus or the next person, but I'm just being real. Like, I can't do nothing about the work, like somebody disliking me. And I'm not making it seem like it's a lot of people. A lot of people love me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a good guy. I look out for people. Like, I do good for the community. Like, I mean, I ain't looking for no praise, but I'm just saying, you know what I'm saying? I'm just like, right. I don't give no people no reason to hate me. But, you know, it's people out there that just, they got their favorites. So they, mm-hmm. if they got their favorites, they have to hate everybody else. And that's the thing that I think what I tried to change with NCAA, which a lot of people might have, you know, problems with, I hate the word rivalry. Like, I feel like people put rivalry to two individuals and they make it seem like they got to hate each other. Mm-hmm. Like, people are like, oh, you and Andre rivalry going to start back up because you were, that's my brother. Like, that's my boy. That's my Canadian brother. Like, ain't no rivalry. Like, yeah, obviously we got the same goal, but I ain't beefing with him. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's the thing we got to understand. Like, people be trying to make this thing a gridiron match in a sense. And I'm like, man, that ain't even got to be all that. So it's funny. But yeah, that's the craziest thing, man. Like, I be seeing people just speaking negativity on my name. And I mean, I can't do nothing about it. Look, as long as they don't say it to me, we ain't got no problems.
So among sprinters, hold on, like even like last year, and when they're playing up like all this drama between like Christian Coleman and Noah Lyles last year, that was on Twitter and whatever. Like, that's not a real rivalry.
That ain't got nothing to do with me. I don't know. I don't know. Look, I always tell people like this. Look, all the going back and forth on social media, man, that stuff for little girls, man. I ain't saying. Him, like Christian or Noah, are little girls because of the situation, because they probably were just speaking their mind on situations. I'm speaking in general. When people stir up things and they get to going back and forth, and it's like, bro, we running track. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm gonna take myself out of the athletic body and I'm put myself back in the body of the person that was back in St. Pete. Bro, y'all are running track. Like, what y'all about to box it out? Like, if y'all ain't gonna fight, like. It's like, what's the point of making beef? Like, that's why I never understood that with rappers. Like, y'all, like, if y'all ain't about to, like, figure this thing out right now, ain't no reason. Like, I'm not about to go back and forth with nobody. Mm-hmm. Like, when people be stirring up, I'm like, look, I ain't about to argue with you. Like, for what? Like, I got a family to feed. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, if we being honest like that, I never understood it. Like, I ain't never understood, especially in our sport. Our sport ain't even no contact sport. Like, why are y'all beefing? We running a straight line. it's crazy, but. Like I said, that's their business. But I don't think it was real, though. I don't think it was real beef. Because obviously they got to the meat and they was dapping each other up and hugging each other. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know. But I think, like I said, a lot of it is from the outside stirring it up, making it a situation. Oh, we heard him say it. We heard him say it. Man, look, if them boys got beef, they're talking out. They got to run into each other one of these days. You know, so it's like. Man, it be the outside people, bro. It really be that. It be the talkers around the people. You know what I'm saying? So that, I think that's where it really be. And shoot, it may be them. I don't know. But like I said, I know Christian. I know Noah. I'm not in there. I'm not in their circle. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know what go on. Like, I'm just looking from the outside in. You know.
All right. If you could go on a run anywhere in the world now, assuming someone can hold a nice conversational pace with you. It could be anyone. Who would it be, and where would the run take place?
If the run had to take place, I'm gonna be real, and a lot of people might not know this person, but a lot of people might. So, I would say obviously Monaco, and I would go on a run with Eric Thomas. He a motivational speaker. So, the reason I chose him because little do that man know, he helped save my life. Like, real talk. Like, I remember he came to my high school. Going into my senior year, and he talked to us, and his story, man, it was just powerful. Like, and I don't think he understood that the room that he was speaking in was a fast guy in the making. And I'm just sitting there, man. I'm just like, the stuff he was saying, like, cause he gave that famous speech about if you could believe as much as you could breathe, you know, kind of that speech mm-hmm. and everything. And I was just like, I'm listening. I'm like, man, what this man is saying, like, makes so much sense. And I'm just up here making excuses about everything when I could just make something happen, you know? And I'm big on wisdom. Like, people won't know me. Like I said, I come from the South Side, but I'm big on knowledge, man. Like, I got 2 degrees. Like, I got a master's degree and a bachelor's degree as well. And I'm big on knowledge. I read books. Like, I try to make sure that my mind expands to new heights so I can understand things and be able to motivate people the right way. So it's like, he was a very wise guy, still a wise guy. Like, I still listen to his podcast and got all this stuff on my iTunes. And, man, I just like to pick his brain on things. Like, it's funny. Like, I remember when the Olympics came around, like, they was like, if you could have anybody talk to you right before the Olympic final, who would it be? I always put him. Like, I always put him because I'm like, man, the stuff that he say, that feeling that you, that tingling feeling you get through your body, like it, that's what I get when he speak. I'm just like, man, like, I'm ready to go. Like, I'm ready to run. I'm ready to do something. Like, and I think he's one of the reasons why I can't just sit in the house and do nothing. Like, people are like, Trey, you always doing something. Like, what can't you do? You do photography, music, now you're in barber school and you run track. You got your master's. I'm like, man, look, if I sit still, my time will be wasted. If my time is wasted, I can't evolve into the person I'm supposed to be. Like, I'm not about to just sit here and do nothing. So I take my time wisely, man. I can't waste it. I'm moving. I'm like, just like the clock. That's me. I'm going. I take that little bit of time to get some sleep, but once I wake up, I'm back at it.
So if this run takes place in Monaco, I mean, Monaco is a small country. You can run across the entire thing, and it's 4 miles. Question for off of that, sort of, because I've asked Usain Bolt this, and you're kind of like, you've got your time up there as well in terms of just like the 100. Everyone knows he's a 100 guy. Have you ever run an 800? And because a lot of distance runners also listen to this podcast, they're probably curious. It's like, what's your fastest mile? And could you break 5 minutes for the mile? What do you think?
Oh, woo! Could I break 5 minutes? No, sir.
That's 75s, I think. 475.
Can I break a 5 minute mile? No. Nah, man. I ain't even gonna lie to you. That's tough. That's tough. It's tough for me to break 6 minutes and 30 seconds. Like, it's tough for me to break 7 minutes. I ain't gonna lie to you. Like, if I run 6 minutes anything, I'm in some good form. Like, cause when I ran 9.8 before I got hurt, I was able to run a mile in like 7 minutes and like 15 seconds. And that's me, like, I'm like coming back, like running, like pumping. So like, man, look, I got asthma. I can't run that long. Like that's a lot.
I think you're selling yourself short. Wait, what's the longest like race you've done in like practice? Is there any 800 you ever done?
Oh no. The longest race.
Probably four, ever right? Done,
just I ran like, being at Baylor, you know, it's a 400 school, so I ran like we'll do like 450s and stuff like that, but it was never like timed all out, you know what I'm saying? But so all out, I say 350 is the fast, like 350, man. Like anything after 350 meters is time, but it's like, it's equivalent to what he know your body can take, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, he ain't about to say, oh, go run a 450 at like 56 seconds. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's not happening. And I don't even think that's fast. Like, you know, so I'm like, nah, 800 miles. Nah, ain't happening.
All right. Final question. It has nothing to do with running. It's, you get 25 shots from half court on a regulation size basketball court. If you make one shot, you win $25 million. If you don't make any, you'll go to jail for 25 years. Would you attempt the shots?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to hit one. Look, it's, well, hey, that's crazy. So back in the city when we were younger, we used to actually do this for money. Like, we'll go to the park and we're like, whoever hit first get like a couple dollars, like get $20. Man, when I tell you, my cousin, this man never missed. He will hit like four shots from half court in a row. So obviously I learned his technique. So now I'd be like, look, you said 25 shots, and if I hit one, I get $25 million. I promise you, I'm gonna get that money. I promise you, I'm gonna get that money.
One of these days, go out to a basketball court, film yourself doing it, send it to me. I want to see it. You're probably the most hype I've seen of someone getting asked this. Yeah,
I'm gonna hit one. I might hit two. I'm not even gonna lie to you. 25. Cause the thing is, so I'm pretty sure everybody's strong enough to throw a basketball from half court. But I can actually, like, shoot like from half court with form. You know what I'm saying? Like, people make fun of me about it because I shoot, but I can actually like do it. Like, I don't have to do this and right. all that. Like, I do go like this sometimes, but I don't barely move. Like, you know, you see people go like the throw yeah. it. Like, I'm just like, I hold it like this and just like flick it. And I'm telling you, it's a technique to make it. I'm telling you. So yeah, I'm gonna do that one day. I'm gonna go film myself, and I'm gonna have somebody with me to count all the shots in the camera so people know I ain't cheating. I'm telling you, I'm gonna hit one.
I'm excited for that. Trayvon, thanks so much for doing this. This is a lot of fun. We'll definitely have to do this again sometime.
Oh yeah, for sure. No problem.
That's all for this episode of the show. If you listened to and enjoyed this episode, give us a shout out on your Instagram stories. We'll repost it to all our followers, and that helps new people discover the show. Very quickly, I'm now doing a weekly newsletter where you can get your fix of all the news in the running community, as well as analysis and commentary from yours truly. Stay up to date. It takes 1 minute to sign up on Substack. The link is included in the show notes. So I look forward to dropping that email in your inbox every Friday. I will be in Boulder, Colorado for most of August. So if you're out there or know of some cool running spots or places to hang, feel free to reach out. This is my first time visiting, and I definitely want to make the most of the trip. Hit me up, Twitter, @ChrisChavez, Instagram, Chris_J_Chavez. Email me, Chris@sidiousmag.com. Many thanks to Gooder for sponsoring the show. Show some love for the sponsors and pick up a pair of the most affordable performance sunglasses. They're only $25 and come in great styles. Visit gooder.com/sidious. That's GOODR.com/sidious to see some of my favorite lenses and styles. I've been your host, Chris Chavez, wishing you some happy and healthy running. Legs are feeling good. Eyes are looking gooder.